I do think Terry is kind of pointing out that I think it's a complicated trade environment because it's not there's not a million trade scenarios that work for Darius. There might be 10 that realistically work. There's a part of me, though, that still thinks, I don't think the Cavs really seem to have tried to engage the idea of trading Darius and what that actually would look like.
I don't know. It's hard because, like, we just find out after the fact with everything, right? Like, after the fact, we find out they were involved in Durant. After the fact, we find out that they were involved in DeAndre Ayton. It seems like they just move in silence, and so they give us the impression that they're not involved in anything, while then after the fact, we find out that they're involved in a lot.
I mean, I think we're right on track for the summer of almost. And that was my warning after the Durant thing of, this feels like the thing that you leak. Like, I like the Lonzo Ball trade. I mean, that was, I originated it. But I took it from me, basically.
Ethan Sands, too.
Him second. Definitely me first. But the Merrill and Jerome thing, I don't love, even though I understand that it's a gamble. Because if Sam is who he was 2 years ago, it's going to work out. But I don't love this idea of, and I think Lima's done a great job at pointing out how you realistically only have 2 years left with this core. And I think if we just go, well, it's hard to find a trade for him. Yeah, if your stance is, I need 110 cents on the dollar, which is probably right. Not what you should get for Darius.
And that's been one of the big talking points all the time of this. It was that you're probably not going to get anything more than 80 to 85 cents on the dollar. But I just wonder if many people across the NBA have, I mean, they know this, they pay attention, but just come to the realization that Darius is a very injured player. It's like the one reservation I have with Darius in the entire time. It within the playoff miscues, and we can talk about that, but it's a fact that I just don't know if he's going to be healthy or not.
So if we go by the two-year rule, meaning one of these three guys isn't going to be here
in the next two seasons?
At the end of the next two seasons.
Okay.
There's a part of me that's like, well, are you chintzing yourself by not exploring? All right, if it's 85, 90 cents on the dollar, but those pieces roll up to Donovan and Evan better.
Yeah.
Is it not in a way being made whole?
No, like, yeah, in many ways it is. Do you think it's interesting that we've kind of, and maybe not us, but I feel like the national media, it's not as if Darius gets brought up in trade discussions all the time. There was a stretch where it was like a month ago where it felt like it was, you'd hear like a rumor here and there, and maybe you'd have some connecting dots, like for instance, when the Magic were in play and looking for players before they got Desmond Bane, they was routinely linked to them. And then we had the Minnesota conversation, but it feels like all these conversations have just kind of dried up.
And they have, but I also think that's, I mean, you know, going into the week of the draft, I said, if it's going to happen, I think it's got to happen now. Because once free agency set, it gets even tougher and tougher to make things work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at Houston, you look at Miami. In Miami, the Darius Garland for Tyler Hero and Jaime Jaquez was an idea that I was really interested in. And, well, they've kind of moved on. They've gotten Norman Powell, who's going to be their two guard
now.
Yeah,
they were in search of Bradley Beal for a little bit, but now because of the Powell move, they can't even afford that if they wanted.
But like Desmond Bane, and now you weren't going to trade Darius to Memphis, but a three-way trade where Desmond Bane ends up in Cleveland and Darius ends up elsewhere and, you know, somebody gets some picks, Memphis gets some picks for him, that would have made sense. Well, Desmond went to Orlando. So those were the two trades that most interest me. So, yeah, I do think the well has dried up a little bit, but I think some of it might be some stubbornness by the Cavs, and they've earned the right to be stubborn, but I don't know that I need to change my expectations as a fan just because you still believe in this core and we've got a wealth of information to say maybe we shouldn't.
Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, Kobe built this whole thing. He's going to believe in it longer than anybody else is going to feel comfortable admitting it. It's just, how long is he going to take this for?
And can I tell you what I think is where this thing comes to fruition?
Where's that? Is it the deadline next year?
No, I actually think the thing comes to fruition is at some point you're going to be choosing between Darius and Donovan. And at some point, it might make more sense to choose Darius, who's going to be a cheaper player and who fits with Evan just as well, and maybe better because he's a facilitator.
How much of that is dictated off of how Evan actually develops?
Oh, that's, yes.
Because like, if Evan's awesome and he takes that next step, you don't need Donovan as much, yes, as you once did. And yeah, so you can have Darius and Evan and then shape your team around that. But it is with the idea that Mobley takes a little bit of a step forward.
So I think there's a part of me that just feels like this is procrastination of a decision. You really, I mean, listen, realistically, even though you didn't trade Darius for Donovan 3 years ago, the second you got them on the same team, there was going to come a moment where you had to make a decision between those two players. And I do feel like there's a part of me that wonders, are we being stubborn by not making that decision? Because eventually, like next year, you have to make the decision on the Darius contract extension.
Right.
And guys, I'm actually not, even though I would have traded Darius for the right piece this offseason, yeah, there's a part of me that wants Darius here long-term too. The problem is, then I'm going to have to start thinking about trading the other guy. And you, so like the math just keeps mathing, and the Cavs are like, nah, I'm more of a feels guy, right?
Yeah, and to be fair to them at least, or at least their perspective of it, if they don't accomplish a ton this upcoming season, it's not as if Kobe Altman is all of a sudden going to be out of a job.
Yeah.
Like, he can run this thing out, and he can really take it as far as he needs to take it, which is interesting, because it's just not, I don't think it's how a lot of us fans want to treat it, but Kobe really, if the bottom line is figuring out how long he can keep his job and stay employed, it's not in jeopardy this year.
And in fairness, we probably shouldn't automatically go to the idea of, I just hiccuped on air. Don't
That's
worry.
Okay.
It wasn't a burp, though. Never admit that. But he's probably earned the right where we peel back some of the careerist criticisms that I've had and you've had, because the things that he's done have not derailed this.
Wait, you mean of Kobe? Or Kobe. You mean of, because I've defended Kobe, I think, more than most people.
You have, especially for running it back this year. But I think, like, for me, I don't think he's just doing it from a careerist standpoint, which is what it felt like a year ago to me. But I also think he's being a little precious. And if your expectation is the Cavs are a really good regular season team and they probably top out somewhere between the divisional round and the Eastern Conference round, and you're fine with that, and I think Dan should be fine with that on some level, you're going to make a lot of money, it's going to be very successful, Cavs fans are going to be very happy, that's better than driving this thing into a ditch, even if you win a championship and being where Toronto's been the last 3 years. I understand why owners would take consistent competitiveness over that one great chance to win a championship like the Kawhi trade for Toronto. At the same point, as a fan, I want another title.
So I don't think he's looking at it like consistent competitiveness. I think he's just looking at it like, I'm waiting for the dam to break through, basically. I'm waiting for the pieces to fall in place. And I think a lot of us are looking at it like we've been waiting too long for the pieces to fall into place, and we're kind of tired of it. But I think for him, I don't think he's like, hey, I'm gonna do what the Guardians do, and win 90 games every year and make that my competitive stance. And just as long as we do that, we're cool. I think he's looking at it like this is us trying to be competitive. This is us going for it.
But I would push back to Kobe and say, well, you've topped out. You've been genuinely swept in the second round of the playoffs, and you've fallen back on something like health or in like if you had gotten genuinely swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. I could get around to the idea of, well, okay, you weren't healthy. You were one of the last four teams in the NBA. And
yeah, and let's say you ran up against the Celtics, for instance, if they were all healthy. And it's like, oh, this is just the end of the road. That's what it was.
And by the way, let's see if we can get more out of the pieces around the core.
Right, but it's not how it went down.
But the gap between second round of the playoffs and, you know, winning an NBA championship is much farther than, let's say, the second round of the playoffs and maybe the play-in, right?
Oh, yeah. No, and we agree. I mean, it's just, and the Pacers should have been eye-opening. The problem that happened with the Pacers series is they didn't lose to the Knicks the following series. It should have been eye-opening, but then Halliburton all of a sudden started looking like a top 10 player in the league, and Carlisle started looking like a top 10 coach in the league, and they started looking like a much better team than what they were when the Cavs got bounced. Like, I think the perception around losing to the Pacers when it first happened versus when the season ended, drastically different, and I don't think that's helping the Cavs.
And okay, so maybe what kills me about this is, as a fan, I'm always going to want you to chase the ring. Make the big move. Put them on the table.
Yeah.
Because at least you can say you tried. I think what kills me is I don't think there's ever been more of an element, and I don't want to say luck because that's a wrong word, but where there are so many different things that are impacting the title now and winning a title because of the wealth of talent spread across so many teams.
That's part of the problem I have with the NBA at the moment, that, is that it feels like it's who the healthiest team is going to end up winning the title.
Well, but it kills me that like the Cavs are have like a 55.5 win total from Vegas right now, and I think they can do that. I just don't think they're going to win a championship next year. We should. Every team in the, like, if you are in the Cavs position, we should feel like we're in the catbird seat to win a championship. We should feel like we don't need LeBron, and I, as a Cavs fan, do not feel that way.
Right.
I feel like, oh, no, I'm going to go ahead and enjoy the hell of another great regular season, and then invariably, in some way, you're going to get bounced in the playoffs in a way that I'm not going to like.
I'm happy that you're set up to at least enjoy the regular season. I don't know how I'm going to treat this regular season. I think I'll enjoy it, but I can't guarantee it. I might just be talking about the postseason the entire time.
Well, see, this is assuming they win 55 or more games. If you end up being a 48-win team next year and Donovan has injuries issues or Lonzo isn't, like, if you start having more injury issues and it's a sludge, like, it's a
because you know you're starting off until at least December without Darius already. We know that.
Yeah. And not just that, but it's like you're also trusting Lonzo to be healthy. Sam Merrill wasn't healthy last year and certainly wasn't effective. Like, there are elements of this that it could be a really uncomfortable regular season. And that I think the Cavs are almost taking their regular season success for granted because you don't win 64 games every damn year.
That's a fair take. They might be. Part of them might be. But again, too, I in a weird way, if they start to slide during the regular season, I'm willing to take a step back if it means they become a better 16-game team. If they become a better postseason team, I'm willing to do that. But again, that involves them shaking up the core a little bit more than just Lonzo Ball.
And here's the problem. We're going to react to the regular season before we get to the postseason. So if you're a 48-win team and you're a 5-seed, we're not going to, if you think we're not giving you a chance to win now, yeah, you're going to have to prove it every night of the NBA playoffs, which, again, is the thing they still haven't done.
And some people do it too premature. You know, Knicks fans, for instance, in January were writing that season off as they were a 500 team, and they just looked like they were just going nowhere, and then they end up in a conference finals.
Knicks fans in general, very premature.
Always
they
premature.
They crown them, and then they uncrown them quick as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, you got like 2 weeks of enjoyment if you're a Knicks fan, if you're a New York sports fan in general.
But
it doesn't seem awful in many ways.
Alcohol opens up the window on the margins, right?
Are they big drinkers in New York?
You'd have to
I figure
be.
You got like $18 cocktails everywhere you go. I feel like I'd be, I mean, I'm relatively sober now, but I feel like I'd be a really sober person if every drink cost me $26.
I just assume that if you live, New Yorkers
drink at home a lot?
New Yorkers live with such an edge. I don't know how you can survive without either fighting someone every week or drinking every week.
Yeah, but like imagine going to just any sort of place to get just even just a cocktail, and it's like, here, it's $26 now.
The corner store.
$21.
That 24 pack is pretty cheap. Liquor store. That fifth is pretty cheap.
Imagine even liquor store price has got to be pretty expensive in New York. New York's just an expensive place.
It is, but not compared to what you pay going into a bar.
No, but it's not. New York in general, sometimes I feel like it should be its own little country or something. Like it's just like it should be separated from America. The wealth there and the amount of money that you need to have there is just it's just another thing.
So you want to kick the wealth out of the country?
It's not kicking them out. It's like it feels like you're stepping into a different place almost.
It does.
Because of how expensive everything is.
And
it's like, that's not Midwest prices, I'll tell you that.
Like, okay, like when you go to Chicago, there are shades of Cleveland, there are shades of Milwaukee, there are shades of, I think there's some shades of Detroit. Like those, like there's a lot of towns that remind me of Chicago. There's no town that reminds me of New York. Not even Philly. They're just both angry. It's good. I think we really analyzed some cities here.
Yeah, Philly's close though. I don't think they're as expensive. I feel like you get more bang for your buck in Philly.
Yeah, I think you also get...
You get some cheesesteaks, too.
You also probably have a greater chance of dying there.
In Philly?
Yeah. It's not great.
I don't know enough about their gang problem or their any problems they have there. Although I have seen... I've seen a documentary on Meek Mill, so maybe I need to close my mouth now.
There we got
to
go. 216-474-0092. Does Darius Garland not having as many trade suitors as you thought, does that give the Cavs an out for not making a move here and a viral moment that makes no one look good in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan?